Well, we are continuing this morning with our study through the book of Job, and we are in the part of the book where Job is presenting his final discourse. This discourse started in chapter 27, and it continues through chapter 31. We happen to be in chapter 29 today, but in this final discourse, in chapter 27 and 28, he's especially addressing his friends Eliphaz, Bildad, and Zophar. For a final time. And in chapter 27, he confirmed to them that he was a man of integrity and that he intended to keep living that way, regardless of what they had accused him of. In chapter 28, he spoke of the need for true wisdom and how it could only be found in the fear of the Lord. And now in chapters 29, 30, and 31, what he says is primarily directed toward God. In chapter 29, we're going to see he's going to talk about the happiness that he once had in his life. In chapter 30, he's going to talk about the sorrow that he was having to endure. And in chapter 31, he's going to make his final presentation toward God of his innocence. So today, we focus on chapter 29, and let's begin by reading the chapter. Job again took up his discourse and said, Oh that I were as in months gone by, as in the days when God watched over my life, over me. When his lamp shone over my head, and by his light I walked through darkness, as I was in the prime of my days, when the friendship of God was over my tent, when the Almighty was yet with me, and my children were around me, when my steps were bathed in butter, and the rock poured out for me streams of oil, when I went out to the gate of the city, when I took my seat in the square, the young men saw me and hid themselves, the old men rose and stood. The princes stopped talking and put their hands on their mouths. The voice of the nobles was hushed, and their tongue stuck to their palate. For when the ear heard, it called me blessed, and when the eye saw, it gave witness of me, because I delivered the poor who cried for help, and the orphan who had no helper. The blessing of the one ready to perish came upon me, and I made the widow's heart sing for joy. I put on righteousness, and it clothed me. My justice was like a robe and a turban. I was eyes to the blind and feet to the lame. I was a father to the needy, and I investigated the case which I did not know. I broke the jaws of the wicked and snatched the prey from his teeth. Then I thought, I shall die in my nest. I shall multiply my days as the sand. My root is spread out to the waters. My dew lies all night on my branch. My glory is ever new with me, and my bow is renewed in my hand. To me they listened and waited and kept silent for my counsel. After my words they did not speak again, and my speech dropped on them. They waited for me as for the rain, and opened their mouth as for the spring rain. I smiled on them when they did not believe, and the light of my face they did not cast down. I chose a way for them and sat as king, and dwelt as set as chief, and dwelt as a king among the troops, as one who comforted the mourners. Now you can see Job is speaking in some detail about the blessing of God in his life before all the trials, all the suffering began. And really, what he's talking about here is he's just giving us a fuller description of the first three verses of the book. If you look back to chapter 1, verses 1 through 3, just a reminder of how Job was described at the very beginning. And now in chapter 29, he's just giving us more detail on what that looked like. There was a man in the land of Uz whose name was Job, and that man was blameless, upright, fearing God, and turning away from evil. 7 sons and 3 daughters were born to him. His possessions also were 7,000 sheep, 3,000 camels, 500 yoke of oxen, 500 female donkeys, and very many servants. And that man was the greatest of all the men of the East. Job was clearly a blessed man. And we're going to look at that blessing from two angles this morning, because that's how he presents it. First off, he was a blessed man as far as his relationship with God was concerned. There was a blessed relationship with God and blessing from God as a result, just by virtue of his relationship with God. And then he was also blessed in outward things, blessed in his family, material possessions, and even in his influence in the community. So we're going to look at this morning from those two angles of the blessing. So we start with number one. The blessing of God begins with God himself. If you notice in verse 1, it says, Job again took up his discourse and said. Now, it said this back in 27 as well. And what this means is he finished what he was going to say And in 27 and 28, which, like I said, was primarily directed toward his friends. And then it seems as if he paused and thought, okay, anything else you guys want to say? They didn't say anything, so he continues his discourse. So he's given them opportunity to give input. They're not giving any at this point. They've said what they're going to say. So he continues to speak. And what he does, he begins to speak about what his life was like before all the trials and suffering began. And it says he longs for those days. He says, oh, that I were as in the months gone before, in the days and those days. But it's interesting to note that when he's talking about what he longs for in this chapter, as he talks about what he longs for, he's not longing for a life with no trials. He's longing for a life, he's remembering the presence of God and how he was so aware of the presence of God. That's the primary thing that he's longing for, even more than the actual details of his suffering. He's longing for the kind of relationship that he had before, because he's at the place now, we've noticed this in several of his speeches, he just cannot sense the presence of God like he used to. He's just not real to him like he used to. There's so much confusion that's there. So that's what he's longing for. He's remembering the presence of God in his life. Several phrases there. He talks about the time when God watched over me, when his lamp shone over my head. He talks about when Job walked by his light, the light of God. He talks about, he speaks of the friendship of God and when the Almighty was yet with him. So all of the blessings that he's going to talk about really come out of that reality. It's because of the blessedness that he had in the presence of God, in relationship with God, that the other blessings find their place and their explanation. So the first blessing of God that we need to note is this, and that was the blessing of God's undeserved favor. Job lived under the favor of God. It's not a favor that he had earned. When you think about somebody, you say, even if you ask somebody, would you do me a favor? Generally, you're not saying, well, you owe me this. You're just asking if they'll do you a favor, if they'll do something for you. Well, in a much bigger picture, Job was under the favor of God, and it's not because he had earned it. It was something that was freely given to him. He had earned God, he had not earned God's favor. God had given him his favor. Matthew Henry said, this was the chief thing he rejoiced in his prosperity, as the spring of it and the sweetness of it, that he had the favor of God and the tokens of that favor. He did not attribute his prosperity to a happy turn of fortune, nor to his own might, nor to the power of his own hand. Really, Job experienced really every tangible blessing that I think a person could long for. We saw in chapter 1 and just those summary verses, and we see in chapter 29. And one thing that happens, it's so easy whenever God does bless us in tangible ways, just very material and physical ways, whether it's family or material, whatever it might be. When God blesses us in those tangible ways, it's so easy to get so enamored with the blessings that we lose sight of God, the one who's given us the blessings. But Job understood. He understood it in the right format, in the right context. He understood that it was the good favor of God that was the spring of all of the other blessings that he enjoyed in his life. And he also understood, as Matthew Henry said, that it was the very presence of God that gave those blessings a sweetness. I mean, there are lots of people who could be blessed and have the same kind of, similar kind of blessing in their life that Job had. But the sweetness of it just wouldn't be there. They just would not enjoy the blessings in the same sense as Job did because of the context of the presence of God. Job didn't think he was blessed because he had just had good luck. He didn't think that. It was not his own ability. It was not his own ingenuity that he had figured these things out. He understands that God had shown favor to him, and it was God who was watching over him. You might remember at the beginning of the book when Satan was presenting himself to God, and there were the conversations that took place there. One of the things that Satan complained about was said, you know, whenever God would say, have you seen my servant Job? You know, a blameless man, integrity, walking in integrity, upright, fearing God, turning away from evil. Have you seen him? You know, what do you think of Job? And Satan says, well, yeah, you've built a hedge around him, so I can't get to him. to cause anything bad to happen in his life. No wonder he praises you. You won't let me do anything to him. There was a hedge around Job, and that was exactly right. And Job recognizes here that it was God's hedge. He says there, in the days when God watched over me, when his light shone on my head. In other words, he recognized that the favor that was in his life was because of God. God had put a hedge around him. And he's acknowledging that. He understood that. He says God's lamp had shone on him. It was the presence of God that really kind of lit his way and gave context to everything else in his life. Even in times of darkness, it's interesting here. It says, by his light I walk through darkness. And I don't know if when we think of darkness, we think of going through times of confusion or doubt or, you know, frustration, heartache, things of that sort, darkness. He says, by his light I walk through darkness. So what this is telling us is Job had gone through trials earlier in his life, you know, of various sorts. But God was the light that walked him through that darkness. Now, once again, this helps you see a contrast in what he's going through now. He doesn't feel that now. I mean, he's going through more darkness than he's ever gone through in his life. But he just can't sense that presence of God now. That's his frustration that he's been wrestling with so much. But he says, that's what I remember, is how by his light I would even walk through the dark times, the difficult times. So he's recognizing the very presence of God. There's a parallel to this that we were talking about in the Wednesday night Bible study a couple weeks ago. We're doing a study through the book of Romans. And we're in chapter 5. And at the beginning of chapter 5, I want to read those first couple verses to you. And it's Paul is making some conclusions from some things he said in the chapters before, and he's going to start elaborating on these things that he mentions also here. Verses 1 and 2 of Romans 5 says, therefore, having been justified by faith, we have peace with God through our Lord Jesus Christ, through whom also we have obtained our introduction by faith into this grace in which we stand, and we exult in hope of the glory of God. So Paul is talking about someone who has put their faith in the Lord. They have put their faith in Jesus Christ. He's the one who's forgiven them of their sin. He's the one who saved them. He's the one who has given them true righteousness. Therefore, they're justified. They're made right with God through Christ. That's a for sure permanent reality. They are justified by faith. They're reconciled. There is a peace with God that they have now. And then he uses this phrase. He says, we've obtained our introduction by faith into this grace in which we stand. In other words, once you're in Christ, you have a firm footing, a standing in his grace. It's as if he's picturing grace as almost like walking into a building, like you walked into the church building this morning. And now you're sitting in the building, you're established, you're there in the building. He's picturing grace of that sort, where it's almost like we now are in this grace and we stand there. We have a permanent footing in the grace or in the favor of God. So anyone who is a Christian, anyone who is justified, is right with God, actually has a firm footing in God's favor, in God's grace. You live in God's grace now if you're a believer. Well, Job had a taste of that himself. And he understood that that was the source of all the other blessing that he had. It was all from the favor of God. It wasn't his own ingenuity, like I said. It wasn't the hard work he had done. It wasn't good luck. It was the grace of God. Now, he further elaborates on this blessing of God's presence when he says in verse 4, he says, I was in the prime of my days when the friendship of God was over my tent. Now, that phrase, prime of my days, can also be translated the days of my autumn. And autumn is known as a time of harvest. It's when you have harvest parties and so forth. It's a time of harvest. So he says, I was in the day of great harvest, you know, in the prime. What made it so wonderful? What made it so good? Well, the second aspect of the blessing of God's very presence is this, and that's fellowship with God. So point B there is fellowship with God. Because, see, Job had an intimate friendship with the Almighty God. Just saying those words is really kind of an amazing thing. For someone to have an intimate friendship with the Almighty God. And he did. He wasn't someone who just participated in religious rituals, which there's a place for various rituals and the things that are connected with the Christian faith in particular. But it wasn't just that. It wasn't somebody that was just kind of going through the motions saying, this is what I do, and I do this every Sunday morning, or I do these various things. It wasn't just things that he did. He actually knew the Lord in a personal way. He actually enjoyed praying. It wasn't something he had to do. It was just part of Job's life that he prayed. Job enjoyed worshiping. There was an intimacy. There was a closeness. I think Job enjoyed meditating on the truths of God. He just liked to do that because there was an intimacy. There was a closeness with the Lord that he had. And once again, this was the very life of this man. He was described as a man who feared the Lord. And we don't always think of fear necessarily in the connection of a friendship. But once again, this is more of a fear. This is a different kind of friendship. This is actually a relationship with the Most High God. And so there's a respect, there's an awe, there's a reverence that goes along with that. And as we've seen, I'll mention this again, this has really been the greatest trial in his suffering. Now, he had terrible things happen to him. But the greatest of it is that he just cannot sense God's presence anymore. And so as he's thinking back, he's thinking, oh, God, I wish it was like it was before. I wish it was the way it was before. It was like your friendship was so real. It was just so real. There was such an intimacy there because it was so important to him. It's interesting to note that phrase in verse 4 where it says, the friendship of God was over my tent, can also be translated when the society of God was in my tent. The society of God in my tent. That gives a little bit different flavor there. And basically what it's talking about, it means that would be talking about a group of believers, a group of other men and women and children who actually had a fear of God, who actually knew the Lord, and they met together in Job's house. Implication is that Job may have been one who gave leadership possibly to the times that they met together. But it sounds like there may have been some time where they got together and worshiped together. Now, that would only make sense. You know, if there was anyone else in the town who worshiped and had a fear of God like Job did, you want to get together with those guys. You want to share what you have in common. You want to worship together. So it would only make sense that that really was a reality, that was true, was part of that fellowship with God. It was a fellowship that he shared with others. So Job is just a great example to us of what it's like to have a blessed relationship with the Lord. I mean, there's just so many things that are here that I think are good examples to us, things that we want to see happen in our life too. Now, the third aspect of the blessing that was inherent in Job's relationship with God is seen all through Job 29, and it's summarized for us in Job 1, and it's this fact, that Job clearly had a godly life. He clearly had a godly life. The way he lived, the Christian character that he showed. In chapter 29, we see there that Job was a man who stood for what was right and what was just. He was concerned about that justice be done, that the right thing be done. He was a man who had compassion for those in need. It specifically mentions those who were poor, those who were orphaned, those who were widows, even those who might have been falsely accused of a crime. He had compassion for those who were in those kind of situations. He was a man who was known and respected for his wisdom and for the wise counsel that he would give. Well, that's exactly what you would expect. If you remember what it said in chapter 1, Job was described as a man who was blameless, upright, fearing God, turning away from evil. So you would expect this is the way he would live. This is what he would be like. This is the kind of man he would be. And this isn't just Job saying this about himself. Here in chapter 29, Job is actually speaking to God, saying, remember, you know, this is what it was all like. This is the things you worked in my life. So it's Job saying it here. You can say, well, you know, how much can you trust this? Because Job was saying it. But back in chapter 1, God is the one who said it. God is the one who said, Job is blameless. Job is upright. Job fears God. Job departs from evil. God is the one who was saying that. So it's not just something Job is making up because it's reality. When Job says he was blameless and when God says he was blameless, in other words, I think it's the idea that he was honest. He was sincere. He was a man of integrity. He was upright. Those words go together, blameless and upright. He was upright in heart as far as his motives. He was upright in the deeds that he did. He wanted to do the right thing. He wasn't a hypocrite. He took his relationship with God seriously. Now, that doesn't mean he was perfect because he wasn't sinless. There's a number of times in the speeches that Job has made, that he admits that he is not sinless, that he admits that he has sinned in his life. But it also tells us that he, once again, he was not a hypocrite. He did walk in a right relationship with God as a general rule. That was the characteristic of his life. I think one thing about his, when it talks about him being blameless and upright, I think it tells us that his faith was complete. This morning in the earlier class, we're talking about a worldview, the Christian worldview, and how that relates to really all areas of life. And that's important for us to understand, that the Christian life does relate to every single area of life. There are no exceptions. It's complete. It covers everything. But I think when it talks about Job being blameless and upright, I think it's the idea there was a completeness. I mean, his faith in God affected every aspect of his life. It wasn't just tried to act like a Christian at certain times when the society met in his home, apparently, possibly, and didn't really come into play at other times. No, it came into play in every aspect of his life. So I think that's a big part of what's being told us here. And of course, as a consequence of this, he would turn away from evil. He didn't want sin to have a comfortable existence in his life. This is what you would expect from someone who really lived as a wise man. Remember the verse we looked at last week from Job 28:28, where he said, "The fear of the Lord, that's wisdom, and to depart from evil is understanding." There's a sense now where Job is telling us how that played out in his life. You can see the wisdom. You can see the departing from evil in the way he lived, because his life was built on the fear of the Lord. That helps us understand the source of his godly life. If you look at this quote by William Henry Green, he says, "The spring of this perfectness and uprightness, or this complete integrity, was that he feared God. He set the will of God before him as his rule, the glory of God as his end, the approbation of God as his highest reward. In this pious fear of God, he walked all day long." Job didn't live a godly life because he wanted to impress people. It wasn't just because that was what was expected. He did it. He did not do it out of superficial motives. He did it because he loved his God. He had reverence for his God. He had a relationship with him, and he wanted to please him. He really loved the will of God. So, when we think of the blessing of God, and once again, the second section, we're going to talk about the specific ways that Job was blessed and how often God brings that blessing in the lives of many of his people. We need to recognize it started with the favor of God, of being in the grace of God. And the same thing is true of us. I mean, any blessing, anything in our life that we would say, that's something I'm really grateful for. That's something I'm really glad is there. That's someone I'm really glad is a part of my life, or whatever it may be. Then we recognize that all of that goes back to God and the fact that we are in his favor, that we are in his grace. And the way, and of course, the understanding there is that Jesus Christ is our Savior. We have admitted that we are sinful, that our understanding of things is not the way it should be. And we recognize that Jesus Christ is our only hope. And that his grace, the salvation he's provided for us, is that what we want to receive. We want to live in that. So the same is true for us. Any blessing that we have starts with the blessing that we have in relationship with God. Now, each of the second aspect of how Job was blessed, which is really the primary, what most of chapter 29 is about, and that is the blessing of God is often seen in visible ways in believers' lives. I think there's a tendency, and it may be because, well, I'm sure it's because oftentimes this kind of thing is abused in the way it's presented and the way it's talked about, but it's easy to play down sometimes practical blessings that God brings into our life, whether it's in the social realm, whether it's in the family realm, whether it's the material possessions that you have, influence or success of various ways. There's a tendency to want to play those down and to not put too much emphasis. And there's a place where you have to do that. But we also need to recognize, like I said, that these things are part of, connected to, the blessing that we have by being in fellowship with God to begin with. And so, The fact is, more often than not, God does bring outward and visible blessings, tangible blessings, in the lives of Christians. I mean, that is often the case, not 100% of the time, but that is often the case. And even in Job's life, obviously he's going through a really hard time. The next chapter, chapter 30, is going to talk about, well, mine title, his humiliating state at that point. How long did that last? If you look back at chapter 29, look at the beginning, verse 2. Oh, that I were as in months gone by. He's giving us a little clue here that the suffering that he's endured was a matter of months in his life. It was a matter of months. We know from before that his time before, he was greatly blessed with all kinds of material and tangible blessings. We know when we look at chapter 42 at the very end, that when this whole ordeal is over, that blessing is renewed, and there's even more. So when Job talks about the time where he didn't have that tangible blessing, it was a period of months in his life. Now that's what the whole book is about, those months. And it's important for us to understand. But we need to recognize that it is often true that God blesses those who are believers. As a matter of fact, these things are often promised in the Scripture. Let me give you a few examples. Psalm 128 says, "How blessed is everyone who fears the Lord and who walks in His ways. When you shall eat of the fruit of your hands, you will be happy. It will be well with you. Your wife will be like a fruitful vine within your house, your children like olive plants around your table. Behold, for thus shall the man be blessed who fears the Lord." Pretty practical stuff that's promised there as far as blessing for those who fear the Lord and walk in His ways. Psalm 58:11 says, "Surely there is a reward for the righteous. Surely He is God who judges the earth." But there's a reward for the righteous. Psalm 1. "How blessed is the man who does not walk in the counsel of the wicked, nor stand in the path of sinners, nor sit in the seat of scoffers. His delight is in the law of the Lord, and in His law he meditates day and night. He'll be like a tree planted by streams of water, which yields fruit in its season. Its leaf does not wither, and whatever he does, he prospers." Whatever he does, he prospers. There are common promises like that. And so we need to be aware that you can often see the blessing of God in practical and visible ways of someone who's living in the fear of the Lord. Once again, it's not 100% all the time that you can just kind of bank on in that way, because the extent of that blessing, the timing of that blessing, the length of that blessing is up to God. And look by the way, Job 29, verses 18 to 20. Job, one of the things that Job learned was that, well, one of the most best known verses of the book of Job, "The Lord gives, the Lord takes away. Blessed be the name of the Lord." Yes, He gives. Sometimes He takes away. His name is still blessed. He learned that like he'd never learned it before. But look at verses 18, 19, and 20. He says, "Then I thought, I shall die in my nest. I shall multiply my days as a sand." What he's saying is, it's always going to be this way. It's always going to be this way. "My root is spread out to the waters. The dew lies all night on my branch. My glory is ever new with me. My bow is renewed in my hand." All kinds of different pictures there. But the idea is, God's blessed me. It's never going to be any different. Well, that's one of the big things he learned, because it did change dramatically for a period of months. But there were still, I mean, when you lose 10 children, that's not going to be something you're going to forget right away either, even when the worst of it is over. So we recognize, yes, God blesses, but the timing, the extent, all the aspects of the blessing, that's in God's hands. You don't demand from God. It's in His hands. And once again, I think another aspect of this is, if we're going to truly profit from and enjoy the blessing that's there, we treat them with contentment. We're content with what He's given us when he's given it to us. Contentment is really, really key. William Green made an important insight on why it's often true that believers are outwardly blessed. He said, religion fosters those qualities and habits which tend to worldly prosperity and success and to the promotion of the general good. Now, when he said religion, by the way, he lived in the 19th century, and so don't get hyper about that. When he says religion, basically in the 19th century, they would understand religion and the Christian faith really as synonymous terms. So he's talking about the Christian faith. What he's saying that the Christian faith promotes things like being industrious, be diligent, be responsible, be trustworthy. It promotes living within your means. It promotes being a good steward of what you have. It promotes being honest with others, dealing with others in honest ways. It promotes caring for other people. If you do that, you're going to do well. Generally speaking, you're going to do well. Those are the kind of character traits and character qualities that generally produce good consequences, good results, good fruit. So that's a part of the reason that that oftentimes you see very tangible and practical blessings in the life of believers. Okay, let's look at four ways in which the visible blessing of God was seen in his life. The first area is family. In chapter 29, Job makes one simple reference to this, and it's in verse 5. When the Almighty was yet with me and my children were all around me. Just one little phrase. My children were all around me. And just in that simple statement, he doesn't elaborate on that. I think it'd be hard for him to elaborate on that probably. But just in that simple statement, I mean, you just get a sense. Job enjoyed having his kids around. He just enjoyed that. Enjoyed having his children around him. We know from chapter 1 he had 7 sons and 3 daughters. The implication is that the 7 sons had homes of their own. At this time that the book took place. The daughters apparently still lived in Job's home with his wife. But you can tell they all enjoy spending time together because they're always visiting with one another. So the impression that you get is a family characterized by love, harmony. There would also be a clear focus on the Lord, which you know Job would initiate. All of these children were killed. I mean, it's hard for us even to fathom how devastating that would be to Job and to his wife. But we also see then in chapter 42 that God blessed him with 7 more sons and 3 more daughters. The children, the scripture makes it clear that children are a blessing of the Lord. They're a gift of the Lord. Psalm 127 is one of the places where I think it's plain in lots of places, but I like this one. Verses 3 to 5, it says, behold, children are a gift of the Lord. The fruit of the womb is a reward. Like arrows in the hand of a warrior, so are the children of one's youth. How blessed is the man whose quiver is full of them. They will not be ashamed when they speak with their enemies in the gate. I noticed, too, I read an article this week that really through the family is one of the major ways that God blesses a nation. I saw a comparison made, and it was an article that was highlighting really the advantage that Christians generally have in this area as far as family is concerned, especially an advantage over those who would promote ungodly things. And the 2 things that were specifically being talked about were abortion and homosexuality. Those who promote abortion generally, I'm not going to say 100% of the time, generally also have very small families. Those usually go together, not always, but often. What I would consider sexually deviant behavior that homosexuals have chosen does not result in children. It just doesn't. They've got to obtain children some other way. So, Christians have the advantage when it comes to children, when it comes to family. There is hope for generations. And so the family is a big aspect of that. Children are a gift of the Lord. And as it says, blessed is the one who has his quiver full of them. Job was also blessed of the Lord in the area of material provision. Once again, this is only mentioned in one verse, and that's in verse 6. He says, when my steps were bathed in butter, and the rock poured out for me streams of oil. This is a picture of the abundant provision that God had made for him. First, it was like his dairy. His dairy products abounded to the point that if he chose to wash his steps with butter, he could do that, because he had such an overflow of things from that, as far as dairy was concerned. Also, it talks about his olive vineyards being so fruitful that it's as if the rocks were pouring out streams of oil, like from his olive groves and orchards. And it's interesting that Job does not speak of his wealth in terms of silver and gold. He speaks of it in terms that were useful, practical, things he would use with his family, and also things he would use to help others with. Of course, back in chapter 1, it gave us even more detail about what Job actually had. It said there that he had 7,000 sheep, 3,000 camels, 500 yoke of oxen, 500 female donkeys, and very many servants. So, Job was greatly blessed in material ways. He was a wealthy man. Now, one thing we're going to notice here, the two areas that are primarily focused on in chapter 29 show how he used that blessing, what he did with it. He didn't just sit back and indulge in the material blessings that God gave him. He used them. He used the blessing God had given him to bless others. He did this, first of all, in his community service and influence. Community service and influence. I'm going to go ahead and read the rest of the chapter again here, because this is what this almost completely deals with. Starting in verse 7. When I went out to the gate of the city, when I took my seat in the square, the young men saw me and hid themselves. The old men arose and stood. The princes stopped talking and put their hands on their mouths. The voice of the nobles was hushed, and their tongue stuck to their palate. For when the ear heard it, it called me blessed. And when the eye saw it, it gave witness of me. Because I delivered the poor who cried for help, and the orphan who had no helper. The blessing of the one already ready to perish came upon me, and I made the widow's heart sing for joy. I put on righteousness, and it clothed me. My justice was like a robe and a turban. I was eyes to the blind and feet to the lame. I was a father to the needy, and I investigated the case which I did not know. I broke the jaws of the wicked and snatched the prey from his teeth. Then I thought, I shall die in my nest, and I shall multiply my days as the sand. My root is spread out to the waters, and dew lies all night on my branch. My glory is ever new with me, and my bow is renewed in my hand. To me they listened and waited, and kept silent for my counsel. After my words they did not speak again, and my speech dropped on them. They waited for me as for the rain, and opened their mouth as for the spring rain. I smiled on them when they did not believe, and the light of my face they did not cast away. I chose a way for them and sat as chief, and dwelt as a king among the troops, as one who comforted the mourners. Verse 7 starts off with Job speaking of going to the city gate and taking his seat in the square. It was in the city gate that the civil magistrates would meet together. And we see this illustrated a number of places, other places in the Old Testament. But they would meet together, and the leaders there would discuss business matters. They would address legal issues. They would make judgments on criminal charges and things of that sort. But all that took place in the city gate, where they would take their seats and they would make those determinations. In verse 8, Job says he was respected by those who were both young and old. They had a respect for him. In verses 9 and 10, it says even princes and nobles stopped what they were saying to listen to what Job had to say. Verse 25 implies that Job may even have served as chief or king. Both those terms are used. I chose a way for them and sat as chief and dwelt as a king among the troops. Now, often individual cities would have their own king. We see that lots of times, and that could be what the situation was with Job. We don't know that for absolute certain. But it does seem like he had an important position, and it may have been more equivalent to what we would consider a mayor of a large city today in our terms. I think one thing important to recognize, Job didn't have to do any of this. He didn't have to. He could have sat at home, enjoyed his family, lived a comfortable life. But he chose to serve his fellow citizens in that way. John Gill made this observation. He says, though he had an affluence of the things of this world, he did not indulge himself at home in ease and sloth, but went abroad to take care of the public welfare, maintain public peace, and administer public justice among his neighbors, performing the office of a civil magistrate. I mean, what a great example. I mean, this is exactly the kind of man you would want to serve in those kind of positions. Positions of governing, magistrate positions. He was a godly man who lived in the fear of the Lord. So that made him an honest man, someone who could be trusted, one who truly cared about people. He was wise. He had great concern for justice. In verse 14, it says, I put on righteousness and it clothed me. My justice was like a robe and a turban. Even now, justices, judges, generally wear, well, especially in our country, and I'm sure it's probably true in most others, they wear a special robe to kind of designate, you know, when they're sitting as judge, when they're acting in their role as a judge. And really it's symbolic, basically, to show that they've been set apart by the community or by the state or by the nation to represent the nation in these matters, to represent the laws of the nation, and to make, you know, a determination really on behalf of those who have put them in that role. For Job, it wasn't just a matter of wearing a special robe, because there are people who wear those robes who don't rule justly, who don't deal honestly. They just don't. So just wearing the robe doesn't make it happen. But Job was talking about his godly integrity really was such that it epitomized the righteousness and the justice that the robes represented. That he may have had a robe, he may not have had, but he actually had what the robes represented. He had that. He was a man of wisdom, and people wanted to hear what he had to say. Verses 21 to 24 says, to me they listened, they waited, they kept silent for my counsel. After my words, they didn't speak again. My speech dropped on them. They waited for me as if for rain and opened their mouth as for the spring rain. I mean, people wanted to hear what he had to say. They had issues they needed counsel on. They needed to decide what to do, and they wanted to know what Job had to say. In verse 24, it says, I smiled on them when they did not believe. In the light of my face, they did not cast down. So he says, even those who did not agree with my faith, we did not have the same faith. They did not believe in the same God that I believed in. They didn't believe. But I shared with them as well, and I got along with them as well, and they too were interested in what I had to say. So he was a man who was known for his wisdom. He was a man of wisdom, and he shared it with others. He used it to help others. One thing I couldn't help but think of, and you might think of this too, we are coming to a time where we're getting ready to elect civil magistrates, everywhere from local to state to national, in just about 2 months now, September, October, beginning of November. I don't know about you, but for me, I would think, wouldn't it be great if we had people like Job running for office? I mean, that would just be wonderful. And to have to choose between them? I think that would be wonderful. What that also means, though, is that Christians need to consider being used like that. Some of you, at some point in your life, may need to run for office. That is not an unchristian thing. That is a good thing. Think about it. Maybe put it on your prayer list somewhere. It may be years away, but it's something to consider. Job is a great example of that. And I think we're a nation ourselves who desperately need men like Job. Okay, in his service to his community, we also see this about Job. He was a man who would care for those in need. One of the things that the prophets of the Old Testament often chastised the people of Israel for, and we really say this is the reason one of the reasons he was bringing judgment on them, is because the leaders of Israel would often take advantage of the poor. They would not treat them with justice. They would often favor the rich over the poor and those in need, because the rich could give them money under the table to kind of, you know, make sure that the case was judged in the way they wanted it judged. They would favor the rich. And God said, that's evil, that's wrong. Don't do that. And much of the judgment came as a result of that. Job wasn't that way. Job was not that way. In verse 12 and 13, We see that he especially took care of those who were poor, the orphan, the widow. He knew they were more vulnerable. And therefore, he had, and also he had the means to help them, both judicially, as far as when there were cases of things that needed to be determined as far as in a legal setting, but also practically. One thing that you see of Job, and really you see this all through the Bible, it was not the kind of thing where it was a government program that was dependent on to help somebody. It was Job who would help them. He had the means. God had blessed him with wisdom to give counsel, but also had blessed him materially so he could give help if they needed help. So it's really, once again, I thought it was a great example all the way around, just looking at Job. And we see a man who was greatly blessed of God. And once again, like we started, blessed from two angles. Blessed from the fact that he had a right relationship with God. He was under God's favor. He was under the grace of God. And we would understand that to be, like we said, to have a right relationship with God through Jesus Christ. To stand firm in his grace, in his favor. That's where it all started from. And of course, God blessed him in many other ways as far as his character was concerned. And material possessions, his family. So many other ways that God blessed him, but it was all based on that. If you just thought for a minute, what is my greatest blessing? What is the greatest blessing in my life? I really believe Job would have said, it's my God. My God is the greatest blessing in my life. There's blessings that come out of that, but the greatest blessing in our life really should be our God. There should be nothing higher than that. Father, we want to thank you.